Welcome to the Alt Asset Allocation Podcast, exploring alternative investment opportunities available to the everyday investor. Here's your host, Ben Lakoff.
Hello and welcome to the Alt Asset Allocation Podcast. Today's interview is with Ronnie Stufferle. He has written the In Gold We Trust report for 14 years now and has some pretty unique views on why we should worry more about inflation and its impacts on our portfolios overall. Is your portfolio prepared for inflation? Did you know the average investment advisor is 54 years old? This means during their professional careers, they've never had to manage portfolios in an inflationary environment. We've talked at length about the death of the 60-40 portfolio, but what does this actually mean? One interesting takeaway I had from the conversation was the advice to look at or follow investment strategies of an emerging market investment advisor. These guys in Turkey, Argentina, Brazil, they deal with inflation in their investment decisions all the time. I found that very interesting. In this conversation, we discuss many things inflation, including why Ronnie believes it's coming, what to watch out for, how to adjust your asset allocation appropriately, and many more. We talk about what sort of investments do well in inflationary environments, things like precious metals, but what about equities with pricing power? You won't want to miss those tidbits. Before you listen, please don't forget to like or subscribe to the podcast, or even better, leave a review. If you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and or like the video. This really helps other people find the channel. The world's investment landscape is changing, and with MMT and inflation coming, or maybe not, you won't want to miss this episode with Mr. Ronnie Stufferle. Enjoy.
Ronnie, excited to have you on today. Welcome.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, we were catching up a bit beforehand, and it's late November, and I had told you that I actually have coronavirus right now. We turned off the video because both of us are wearing masks. We're unsure if it's transmitted through Zoom. No, but really, thanks for taking the time. We're excited to have you. So a lot of my listeners probably already know who you are, but before we go into a number of these things, do you want to just start off with a little bit of your background, who you are, and where you are?
Sure. Well, first of all, Ben, get well soon. I hope that you'll recover very soon. Thanks for inviting me. You're sitting in Los Angeles. I'm sitting in Vienna, where we're experiencing our second lockdown over here in Austria, which is, you know, people get used to stuff like that. But, you know, for the whole family, but also, you know, when it comes to social contacts with friends and family, it's quite demanding, I would say, and I really hope that this is going to be over soon. Well, who am I? My name is Ronnie Stufferle. I just turned 40. I am managing partner at Incrementum, which is based in Liechtenstein, and we're an asset manager focusing on three different things. First of all, fund management, where we manage a couple of funds, primarily in the real estate, real asset space. So we manage money in the commodity space, mining equities, gold, silver, uranium, you name it. So that's what we're good at. The second thing is private wealth management for high net worth individuals. And the third area of our expertise is research. And I'm publishing the In Gold We Trust report now for 14 years. I started publishing or writing about gold back in the days when I still was a young and kind of naive analyst sitting in a big Austrian bank. And I went to my boss and said, hey, I've got this mining stock that is doing so well. I've got it on my private account. I'd love to like learn more about gold. It seems to be an interesting topic. And he said, go ahead. And yeah, that's basically when the whole started. And I actually had no clue that, you know, how do you say, digging into the rabbit hole would start with, you know, analyzing gold and getting a feeling for our monetary system, understanding how our monetary system works, understanding the Austrian school of economics that is not taught at all over here in Austria, unfortunately. And so yeah, surprising. over the years, it became the most widely followed publication on gold. So we're publishing the In Gold We Trust report now in German, in English, but also in Mandarin. And yeah, that's who I am. I'm a proud father of three little daughters. Hopefully they're asleep already. So if you hear some yelling and crying and screaming, it's probably my girls that don't want to go to bed.
Well, awesome, man. So much has happened since that initial miner that you were following. And I'll definitely link your gold report in the show notes because it's fantastic. And it's gigantic. I mean, the amount of information that you have in there, and this is completely for free on your website, it's outstanding. There's no wonder that so many people follow it. That's for sure. Well, given what you do, I mean, so a lot of this, and we'll jump into more, you know, commodities and real assets and these mm-hmm. things, but just zooming out a bit, kind of macro view of the markets when you're talking to your private wealth management clients, like, can you kind of zoom out, give us an overall view right now?
Well, I think that 2020 is really a year when basically all taboos were broken. It is just, you know, for me, I have to say it's been a super fascinating year. I think, you know, crisis bring out the best and worst in people. And I thought, okay, this is just a big challenge, you know, for me as a businessman, but also, of course, as a family father and an asset manager. And I think navigating through these markets with this enormous amount of volatility, those huge stimulus measures, both from the fiscal side, but also from the monetary side, it's really unprecedented. And so I think it's really been a year when some sort of a paradigm shift started. Now, what do I mean by this paradigm shift? I think primarily we're seeing a move from monetary QE in the direction of fiscal QE. I think the fact that this time around fiscal stimulus is so much more important than monetary stimulus, that's really the big difference compared to 2008-2009. Just to give you a number, so far this year we have seen fiscal and monetary stimulus at 31 trillion. I just got the numbers from the IIF, which is a big multinational institute, and they came out with the numbers for global debt, and they expect the number of global debt to be at 277 trillion at the end of 2020 and at 360 trillion by 2030. Now, if we convert 277 trillion into seconds, it is the equivalent of 8.8 million years. So I think those numbers, nobody can really comprehend them anymore. And I think now, as these numbers are so big now, it seems that, you know, politicians, they just don't care about the numbers anymore because taxpayers, they don't get it anymore. So I think, what is the saying in German? We say, ist der Ruf einmal ruiniert, lebt es sich ganz ungeniert. I think in English it's something like,
I wrote it down from another one. Once your worldly reputation is in tatters, the opinion of others hardly matters. So that's my great German translation, don't you worry.
and you know, it seems that we saw lots of things that people probably haven't realized what their consequences will be, such as, you know, average inflation targeting and this move from monetary QE to fiscal QE, the fact that we're seeing an enormous amount of credit guarantees by the government. So basically they try to circumvent the commercial banks now, which is, from my point of view, really, really a big development. Now, to answer your question, I think seeing from clients and colleagues in the industry, I think that the big change this year is really that inflation is becoming more and more of a concern. And nobody really cared about inflation over the last couple of years. While I think that, you know, we're seeing a tremendous amount of inflation, but it's just not in those baskets that central bankers like to calculate. So we saw enormous amount of asset price inflation over the last couple of years. And now I think we're really at a tipping point in the direction of price inflation. Perhaps we're in some sort of a cracker boom phase at the beginning of the cracker boom now. So I think this is really crucial. And this tells me that the traditional 60-40 portfolio, you won't have too much success with a 60-40 portfolio over the next couple of years, because bonds just won't do the job anymore as a portfolio hedge.
Yeah, and that's a great intro, and there's a lot there. But like you said, this is a very unprecedented year, and COVID was kind of the catalyst to get a lot of these things, or accelerate a lot of these things that were already moving, and accelerate them a lot more quickly. I love that saying, and I have no idea how to say it in German, but once your worldly reputation is in tatters, the opinion of others hardly matters. And the idea there, or from what I've gathered from you in other interviews, is that all bets are off at this point. It's, you know, these numbers, 77 trillion dollars of global debt, yeah. 8.8 million years, if that was in seconds. I mean, it's too big to even fathom. Throw all these ideas and these sacred cows out, and you know, what else can we try? I think this is a good segue, perhaps. The idea now, I mean, I've been diving in a lot more deeply into MMT and Stephanie Kelton, and it's that this rephrasing this global debt, that it's not debt. You don't run it like a household. What are your thoughts on this? This just seemed crazy to me at first, but it seems like we're speeding toward MMT, whether we like it or not.
Yes, that's definitely something that I see as well. I think that, well, we have a chart in our upcoming special report on inflation. And it's where we're showing the Google search requests when it comes to inequality, but also when it comes to MMT. And you can see that interest in both topics is off the charts. It's increasing massively. And I always said if Joe Biden should win, and I forecasted last year in November that Biden would make it, I said that MMT will get more and more realistic, because Stephanie Kelton, I mean, she is a strong supporter of Joe Biden. I don't know if she will have any official role, but it is pretty obvious that the Biden team is going into that direction. Well, I think, you know, the first thing that came to my mind when I heard about the theories of MMT was a quote by a friend of mine, and he said the amount of energy necessary to refute bullshit is an order of magnitude bigger than to produce it. Now, pardon my French, but I think, you know, this is something, you know, the magical money tree that Dave Rosenberg described, it's just naive, and it lacks any comprehension of our monetary past. But as I saw on Bloomberg, a fantastic quote from the movie Inception, where actually Dom Cobb, who's played by Leonardo DiCaprio, says, an idea is like a virus. It's highly contagious. So I think that this MMT policy is really something that's whose time has basically come. And if there is a very, very simple and clear answer to a complex problem, I always get a bit, I get a bit worried. Now, I think coming back to your question again, I think it's pretty certain that we will get some sort of MMT, universal basic income, helicopter money, all those policies. They have been very, very, I would say, at the fringe and only for very, very leftist economists. But now they really appeared in or arrived in the in the center of the discussion. And I think this is also one crucial change that we saw in 2020. When we wrote about MMT already the first time in 2016 in our In Gold with Trust report, this was really something, you know, something new and something that nobody would have forecasted. But now I think it's not a question of if, but rather a question of when. So my concern is that capitalism seems to have really died over the last couple of months, and that this enormous amount of interventionism that we're seeing will just continue. And therefore, I'm very, very critical when it comes to MMT. I think it is a very flawed concept. I think it is something that will dramatically change asset allocation. And I think it is something that sooner or later will be introduced.
Yeah, it's definitely not a matter of if these days, it's when. It does change an investor's approach to asset allocation, but how? How do people think through this if money is completely reimagined? How do you think through? What are you watching? What changes do you want to make, assuming that MMT plays out the way that we think it will?
Well, first of all, I think the announcement that Janet Yellen is the candidate of Joe Biden for the Treasury, I think that's another piece of the puzzle that confirms my view. You know, Yellen, she was the head of the FOMC. She trained under economist James Tobin at Yale. And she always followed James Tobin throughout her whole career. And basically, Tobin was a definite supporter of very, very easy money, of generous social spending financed by tax increases. Now, I think Janet Yellen really believes in the Keynesian dictum that federal spending spurs economic growth. And the more federal spending, the better. And I think that this the fact that she will become Treasury Secretary confirms that we will see a much, much closer relationship between fiscal policy and monetary policy. It is not a flirt anymore. It looks rather like a marriage of fiscal policy and monetary policy. Now, I think that if we should really see that the Fed is returning to this role that it played before the change, the famous accord in 1951, where they basically said that the Board of Governors agreed with the Treasury to separate its financing of government debt from monetary policy. If we should really see that, I think this is a paradigm shift that describes my that confirms my view. So it means that I think the market will slowly move into the direction of inflation, and we're already seeing inflation expectations rising significantly. It's no coincidence that tips are rising. It's no coincidence that gold and silver still have a tremendous 2020. We're seeing base metals, agricultural commodities, and now also energy doing extremely well. And I think, you know, if those measures continue to be taken, basically limitless fiscal stimulus and basically limitless monetary stimulus, I think at some point this won't work anymore, because we're seeing this declining marginal utility of measures. And I think this will be the point when those very, very direct measures like MMT, like helicopter money, whatever, will be introduced. I've got no idea about the technicalities, but for example, stuff like CBDC, central bank digital currencies. This was also a topic that was basically for, yeah, kind of a topic for geeks in our sphere. But now this is also coming to the center. And, you know, why shouldn't you have at some point a Federal Reserve wallet or an ECB wallet? And if you want to have some government stimulus, you'll have to have a wallet of those central banks. I mean, that's definitely something that I can think of. Now, if we're going in those directions, I think it will be much, much easier to also implement negative interest rate. Now, I know that, you know, CBDCs, but also MMT, helicopter money, those are all things that are not exactly the same. But what I want to tell you and your listeners is that in 2020, we have moved onto this path. So there was a fork in the road, and I think now we're really going into this direction. Perhaps it will be a combination of those measures. Perhaps it will just be one of them. But I think this is really something that all investors should prepare for. And as I've said, I think that inflation expectations are already signaling us that inflation might become a topic going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have gone down this fork and there is no turning back at this point. So, but before I want to get into inflation in more detail, just a question. From what I understand about MMT, it seems like the enemy of MMT, the thing that they fear the most with MMT, is inflation. Mm-hmm. You have big forces that are pushing MMT and fiscal stimulus, and they're watching inflation and trying not to have inflation tick up. How can you be so bold? Maybe we talk more about your bull thesis for inflation in general, massive monetary stimulus. But like, if we're moving towards MMT and they are wanting to monitor inflation and keep it under control, it seems like you're fighting a big force to be bullish on inflation. So I'd be curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well. That's a very good point, Ben. I think, you know, the fact that one of my absolute favorite market strategists, Russell Napier, really, you should read everything that he puts out and watch his video. He's really fantastic. Russell, he was a deflationist for many, many years, and now he became really aggressive regarding inflation. Now, and this tells me quite a lot, and also folks like Dave Rosenberg. I mean, he's seeing inflation not around the corner, but on the horizon. He wrote that, you know, talking about inflation now is like talking about the dessert when you just got the appetizer. So it might be a bit premature, but I think the foundation is clearly being laid now. When it comes to the inflation targets of MMT, well, I think, you know, politicians and central bankers always find an excuse for changing the rules. So I think it is pretty obvious that basically everybody wants inflation to surprise on the upside. Now, this year in summer, I already mentioned it briefly, we saw this big strategic move by the Federal Reserve from saying basically 2% is the ceiling for inflation. Once we go above 2%, we'll have to consider raising rates. Now we're doing average inflation targeting. So this means if inflation rates were undershooting over the last couple of years, we can allow it to overshoot for some time without having to think about raising nominal rates. And I think this is a pretty, pretty important strategy change that we saw. It was kind of underreported because everybody was still on vacation tried to, you know, clear his head when Powell announced that. at the virtual Jackson Hole Summit, but I think this is really something important. And you know, let's face it, I mentioned the numbers, you know, 277 trillion global debt at the end of 2020 and 360 trillion at the end of 2030. I'm not sure if we will be able to grow out those debt statistics. I kind of doubt it. I have to say, because what would we need to see to make really a positive case for growing out of this enormous debt pile? I think, you know, it is something that many economists still see, but I just think that, you know, having a look at cycles of the last couple of years, it just tells me, you know, growing out of the debt problem is something that is just not likely. So at some point we will have to come to a solution. And from my point of view, inflation is something that was always the quote unquote solution. And I think we will choose this solution again this time. Now, you know, we've been pushing the inflation to go up for quite a while already. It hasn't happened yet, but it doesn't mean that it won't happen in the future. And as I've said, I think markets are already telling us that inflation is becoming a really big topic.
100%. Yeah, inflation seems to be the way out. These debt levels are just astounding. I can't even wrap my head around them. Most people can't. They've just become this arbitrary, crazy number for a lot of people. A lot of people have been calling for inflation for a while now, and maybe it's transpired in different areas like asset prices and healthcare and, you know, education. But why do you suppose it hasn't ticked up yet?
I think the main reason is first of all the correct definition of inflation. Yeah, I think this is really where we differentiate ourselves from many other colleagues in the industry. We wrote a book called Austrian School for Investors, Austrian Investing Between the Forces of Inflation and Deflation, where we basically describe our view on the topic of inflation. I think, you know, starting every discussion, it makes sense to acquaint yourself with the proper definition. And as we are, I would say adherents of the Austrian School of Economics, I would say the easiest or the classic difference is that the Austrian School basically, it's a bit simplified, sees inflation as an increase in an economy's money supply. Now, there are many flaws of the mainstream definition with a CPI. I mean, it was changed over 20 times since 1980. We're seeing those hedonic adjustments. We're seeing many, many things that we could discuss at length. But I think, you know, from an investor standpoint, a price level aggregate doesn't really make too much sense, because it just tells you how prices developed over the last couple of months. And as an investor, you want to know what's going to happen in the future. You want to look through the windshield. So we have created this incrementum inflation signal that is telling us what are markets actually telling us when it comes to inflation. And the incrementum inflation signal is screaming inflation at the moment. Now, what is the big difference compared to 2008-2009? I think the biggest difference, of course, is that this time around, we're already also seeing M2 growth. So broader monetary aggregates going through the roof. We're seeing it growing at more than 20% in the Eurozone, but also for the United States. In 2008-2009, actually broader monetary aggregates were collapsing. So I don't want to defend central banks, but I think that the Federal Reserve and other central banks, they basically just want to compensate for the lack of credit demand that we saw in 2008, 2009. But this time around, it is much more aggressive and also faster monetary stimulus. But now, as I've said, it's also very, very aggressive fiscal stimulus. And I think that politicians have kind of, experienced that, monetary policy isn't really able to create inflation, because for the broader monetary aggregates that are mainly influenced by credit growth, they are just stagnating for many different reasons. Now they want to go much more direct, and this is the reason why first of all we're seeing those measures that we saw, that we discussed before, like MMT, like helicopter money, but also why we're seeing this enormous amount of fiscal stimulus. And just to give you some numbers again, because as I've said, it's just staggering. What would you guess which country so far has the biggest stimulus relative to its GDP?
Well, I know the US was massive, but I'm not sure. Who is it?
It is Japan, actually.
Of course.
Japan is going with 21% of their GDP. Next is Canada, 16%. Then it's Australia, 14%. And then comes the United States at 13%. Oh, yeah. And China, for example, is interesting, 7%. So I think, those numbers are big. And I think it will be some sort of a race who can inject more fiscal stimulus at one point just to get GDP growth going. And I said at a conference recently, the keynote is called All Roads Lead to Gold. When I said, and that was beginning of November, I had a conversation with the CEO of a big mining company, and he asked me, well, Ronnie, if we should get the vaccine, that would be super bearish for gold, right? And I said, no, it would be quite the opposite. Because if we get the vaccine, and we got now three or four of them, and I think there will be more positive news coming out over the next couple of weeks, of course. I think once we get the vaccine, the worst will be probably behind us. I think we will all see light at the end of the tunnel. And this means that the velocity of money will start rising again. And now the velocity that has collapsed over the last couple of months will meet a huge amount of liquidity that was created. So basically at this point, when confidence comes back in markets, and just have a look at the asset rotation that we saw over the last couple of trading days, I think this confidence in the economy is really coming back, and this means velocity should start rising. Now, this is the recipe for rising inflation from my point of view. So actually central bankers and politicians would have to become hawkish now and say, okay, well, we've done our job, now we'll leave you alone. We know that markets that are basically trained like Pavlovian dogs, they won't appreciate those news and they would sell off. So I think that central banks will be way too hawkish, way behind the curve as always. And I think this combination of growing confidence and a huge amount of liquidity now meeting rising velocity, I think this is really the recipe for inflation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to get into that. You mentioned the incrementum inflation signal, and this is something that you're watching to kind of monitor when inflation is coming. Can you provide a little bit more light of what that is, what's involved in those calculations?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course it's proprietary, and we worked on it for many months. And actually, it is telling us when to play offense and when to play defense. So over the last couple of years, actually, since we started Incrementum in 2013, actually, we were playing defense for quite a while, which is sometimes frustrating. But how does the saying go in football? I think it's offense wins games, but defense wins championships. Yeah. So especially when you're investing in highly, highly volatile asset classes like mining equities and gold and silver stocks, I think, you know, you have to control your defense. And that's basically the reason why we did start researching such an inflation signal. Now, it is basically telling us if inflation rates and rather their momentum is rising, falling, or if it's neutral. And, you know, I can tell you the exact calculation, of course, but I can tell you some ingredients. What we have included is, first of all, the price of gold that is, you know, discounting so much information. So I think a trend change in gold tells you quite a lot. Then we're using some ratios because nowadays, with so much intervention happening in asset markets, I think that, you know, absolute prices tell you much less nowadays than ratios. So we use, for example, the gold to silver ratio. Telling you falling gold silver ratio is first of all a very good confirmation for the trend in gold itself, because normally within the course of a strong bull market, silver should outperform gold. But then silver is also more of a inflation metal. So if we see the gold silver ratio falling, it means that it's more of the inflation trade that is being seen by market participants. Then we use commodity prices. We use some ratio charts between mining stocks and the broad equity space, so like the S&P 500. And then we're working technically with channel breakouts. And yeah, it served us very, very well. It has warned of us of, you know, the big shifts in inflation expectations, and therefore we of course we stick to this model as it just works very well. And why did we come up with those ratios and those numbers and those indicators? Basically, we dig through the literature, we crunched the numbers and we said, okay, we have to see what really works once we see this change from disinflation or deflation to inflation. And once we see this big trend change, we just want to ride this inflation trend. And as I've said, gold, silver already started telling us that inflation might be around the corner. And now it's been the commodity space, but also especially the energy space that is screaming inflation. And if you go to an investors conference, I think, you know, being bullish commodities is probably still the most contrarian call. And from my point of view, we might be at the beginning of a commodity super cycle.
Yeah, for the longest time, I mean, being bullish on commodities, that was probably not the sexy thing.
The widowmaker.
Yeah, exactly. That's for sure. Okay, the thought here is that velocity of money increases once we have confirmation that the vaccine is out and that this is behind us and that all this pent-up demand kind of unleashes itself. Is that the kind of idea? And then and then because of that, we'll just have a rampant inflation in the early next year kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would be careful with rampant inflation. Yeah, I mean, I think even if we go to 3 or 4%, I think this will basically catch most market participants on the wrong foot. It would mean a really, really big shift. So I think it's the things that we discussed. So MMT gaining in popularity, it is this accelerated indebtedness due to fiscal populism. It is the fact that we are seeing a very, very aggressive expansion of the broad monetary aggregates like we've basically never seen them before. average inflation targeting and this move from monetary QE to fiscal QE. I think those are very, very strong forces, very powerful forces that are now coming into play. And therefore, I think, you know, the Austrian school is always a bit hesitant when it comes to forecast. They're very, very humble. But from my point of view, you know, making the case for inflation, as I've said, it is a very, very contrarian call, and I think this time really has come now. The leitmotif of our upcoming report on inflation is the boy who cried wolf. You know the story, and I think, you know, ignoring the warning signs and just continuing with the strategies of the past, this means to ignore the third, which was the crucial cry of the wolf. So nobody is seeing inflation. Quite a lot has happened into this direction. And therefore, I think from my point of view, it's one of my strongest convictions. But we also have to say, and that's a great quote by Margaret Thatcher, the lesson is really clear. Inflation devalues us all. So that's a very, very dangerous path if we want to follow that inflationary path, not just for our portfolios, but also for our societies.
Expand on that a little bit more, if you don't mind. I mean, what do you mean in terms of society? Just because the value of your dollar is shrinking so rapidly, you rush out to buy groceries as quick as you can, and like the reverberating effects of something like that?
Well, because inflation basically is a tax. And as we have seen over the last couple of months, basically this gap between rich and poor it grew even more, because who's profiting from this enormous amount of asset price inflation? You know, it is those people who are massively invested, of course, in equities, in bonds, in real estate, in the art market, in commodities, whatever. So I think this gap between the haves and the have-nots is also massively influenced and caused by our monetary system. And there's a fabulous webpage called WTF happened in 1971.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that many, many problems that we're facing at the moment, their root causes basically can be found on 28th of August in 1971. I think it's really important to tell people that this is not a cyclical crisis, but rather a systemic crisis. And if you understand our monetary system and if you understand how leveraging works and how dependent we are on more and more debt, on more and more credit to continue, I think then it really opens your eyes. And I always said at some point there will be, to be very diplomatic, a reorganization of our monetary system. You know, over there in the US, this is something that is probably not something that many people have in mind. But over here in Europe, you know, my grandparents, they lived through, I think, 4 or 5 currency reforms. And of course, if you were mainly invested in paper assets, you lost everything through these reforms. And therefore, I think that, you know, having some gold for this transition period from one monetary system to the next monetary system is really something that you should have. And I think then we will not discuss if gold is trading at 1700 or 1900. I think then the numbers will be significantly larger if we should see at some point this revaluation of gold. In fact, to create trust into a new currency that will be introduced at some point. And there were some fantastic quotes coming from central banks, even, for example, the Dutch National Bank. They said gold is the trust anchor of a currency. And if there's volatility, if there's stress in the system, gold helps the central bank to preserve trust. So that's basically some sort of my end game that I'm seeing, a reallocation of our monetary system where gold will probably be revalued.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I think an interesting way I'd want to go is for the average American or European, we've just lived in this environment since 1971 or World War II, you know, and some stat that you had mentioned in another interview is that the average investment advisor is 54 years old. In his professional career or her professional career, they've never had to manage portfolios in this sort of inflationary environment that it's looking like we're going yes. down. Something you had mentioned was, you know, taking a page out of the playbook of emerging market investment advisors, or how those people in a more inflationary environment, such as Argentina, Brazil, Turkey, are managing money. How do they manage money differently than US or European capital allocators? It's mainly gold, it's currency diversification. How does he think through this?
Well, I think that for those asset managers, inflation is just on the top of their minds. And I think, you know, having to deal with very weak currencies and high inflation rates definitely gives you a different perspective on government debt in local currency, but also, of course, on cash holdings. And, you know, Ben, every time I travel to countries like Turkey, Brazil, some Eastern European countries where they experienced high rates of inflation, you know, talking to people about the lessons of the Austrian school, but also about the topic of gold is something much, much more intuitive for people there. While over here, you know, if you like gold, you're like an, you know, hardcore gold bug, and, you know, you're like living in the past and stuff like that. And this is because people don't have any experiencing in navigating through markets in a highly inflationary time. So as I've said, 45 is the average investment advisor. I think many investment advisors will, you know, they will not realize that inflation might now be the biggest threat for your portfolio. And we also crunched the numbers on that at length, analyzing which asset classes do well and do poorly in times of rising, in times of falling, in times of neutral inflation direction. And I think it's interesting that most people think that stocks being a real asset, they are doing tremendously well in times of inflation or stagflation. Well, that's not really true. It is really a matter of pricing power. Does the company have pricing power? How can they deal with rising input prices? So I think, you know, stocks being, as I've said, it depends on the sector, but I think we will see new winners coming out of an inflationary regime, you know, like commodities, perhaps inflation-linked bonds. In FX, perhaps you could consider long commodity producers versus importers. And on the equity side, I think it will be more in the direction of value, more in the direction of pricing power versus margin pressure, and more in the direction of high fixed rate debt. So those are all things that many people in the asset management industry, I think, haven't realized yet, that we should be applying more of a real assets principle.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And when you say have good grasps on pricing power, I mean, walk me through what one of these, it's controlling the price of their inputs and their output, their selling price, but like, shine a little bit more light on that for me, please.
Well, it basically means that if you have to ask yourself as a businessman, are you a price taker or a price giver? So basically, you have to ask yourself if your product and your industry is so well that you can hand over those price increases that you're seeing on the incoming side, that you can hand it over to the consumer, basically. But I think, you know, I think we should kind of broaden this concept. It's pricing power versus margin pressure. So I think that the main thing would be, for such a new paradigm, average profit margins, where high is obviously good. Then you should have a close look at labor share of costs. also low is good. You can have a look at market concentration, a so-called Herfindahl index. Then, of course, commodity producers, which means pricing power versus commodity buyers, margin pressure. And then I think it's you know, nominal debt levels that will get inflated away by higher inflation. So you should have a close look if businesses with high fixed rate to debt equity ratios that would benefit. And this just tells me that perhaps we should, that cyclicals will lose to defensives in such an environment where inflation really becomes a topic, because there's like a level between, let's say, 0.5% until 2.5% inflation rate, and I'm talking PCE. I think this is an area where stocks don't really have big headwinds. But I think as soon as we go above this zone, and we're explaining this zone in our upcoming inflation report, I think that market participants will really, really realize that, well, perhaps I should have a very close look at my stocks and the sectors that I'm holding in my portfolio, and move, as I've said, from one side to the other side.
That makes sense. Pivoting a bit, inflationary, taking a deeper look at the type of equities that you're holding. But I thought something that was interesting, gold obviously has a place in your portfolio. Bitcoin, I want to get into a little bit later. But something that I wanted to talk about was in Gold We Trust report, you've written this for 14 years. And I think I heard you mention that this was the first year you had a chapter or a section on silver. So why silver? Why now, I guess?
Well, first of all, we thought that at a silver ratio of 125, so meaning that with 1 ounce of gold, you can buy 125 ounces of silver. We thought, well, that's, I think we've never seen such a ratio in history of mankind. So it was extremely, from a contrarian point of view, I think it was a pretty safe bet to say that we'll see at some point a mean reversion. But we also said this year that this bull market in gold is now much stronger than in the years before, and based on our quantitative research, silver always outperforms gold in a gold bull market. And I think we're seeing it this year quite well, that gold is now up, I think year to date in dollar terms, it's up 16 or 17% in euro terms, which I think in US dollar terms, it's up 20% roughly. But on the other hand, silver, it was already up 50%. Now it's still up 32%. So silver is outperforming gold this year, and it's a very, very strong sign. And there's, I think, a fundamental case. So not only from a technical and cyclical point of view, where we just see silver as some sort of momentum play and the leveraged play on the gold bull market, but also from a fundamental supply-demand view, I think there's lots of different things, lots of positive things going on in the silver space that should support prices. And we analyze those imbalances of the supply demand picture in this report. And I think, you know, the case for silver is actually stronger than ever.
Interesting. And for the average investor to play silver, are you thinking silver miners, just buy like the ETF SLV? What's kind of the best way for the average investor to play that?
Well, you know, that depends on your risk tolerance. Silver is just highly volatile. We know that, you know, it's said that if gold rises one, silver rises three, but it's the same to the downside as well, as unfortunately. So you have to live with this volatility and have to deal with it. From my point of view, volatility is something fantastic. I think if you should make use of volatility, and there's nothing more boring than no volatility for me as a, from an asset management point of view. But silver is definitely something that, yeah, shows us that the market is a maximizer of pain. So I think, you know, when it comes to the mining stocks, we're seeing lots of interesting names in the silver space for the large caps, for the mid caps, but also for the juniors. But it's really up to the investor itself, how much risk he wants and he's able to take.
I'm curious, you've written before being bullish on Bitcoin. Do you view this more as a higher beta play on gold, and it's the same gold thesis? Or do you see this as, you know, the potential new monetary world order, an option to opt out? Like, what's kind of your general view on Bitcoin?
Well, actually, we started writing about Bitcoin in 2012, I think. So we learned about it very early on, and I think when Bitcoin was trading at 60 or 70, we first heard about it, something like that. And you know, I would have never thought that we'll go to 20,000, and that now really the institutional side is getting so heavily involved. But it is fascinating, and we just launched a fund this year that combines physical gold with digital gold, being Bitcoin, and then uses an option strategy. And I think that's a great combination in these markets. I think, you know, from a fundamental point of view, I see many, many similarities between gold and Bitcoin. First of all, the stock to flow ratio, we are having some sort of a guaranteed inflation rate, which is roughly the same for gold and for Bitcoin at the moment, which is 1.6%. In 2024, we'll see another halving, and then the inflation rate of Bitcoin will be lower than the inflation rate of gold. Now, what you want to have in this environment is, of course, assets that are non-inflatable, as my dear colleague Mark Valik always says. So I think this relative scarcity is really something that is something that investors will look out for. So I think that the case for Bitcoin going forward is very, very strong, and we're now really seeing this adaptation of institutional players. We're seeing the greatest of all, Stanley Druckenmiller, becoming very bullish on Bitcoin, but also on gold. We're seeing Paul Tudor Jones making a case for gold, for Bitcoin, saying it feels like gold in the year 1976. So I think, from my point of view, it is something that has many, many similarities. Of course, Bitcoin is significantly smaller. I think the market cap now is like 350 billion, while for gold, it is roughly 10 trillion. So, you know, it can pick up, of course. But I am seeing Bitcoin just as a, it fascinates me like gold fascinates me every day. And I love the fact that so many young people and you know, coming perhaps more from the technical side, learning about money, they ask the question, why is gold better than Bitcoin? Why is Bitcoin better than gold? Why is Bitcoin better than the US dollar? So they're asking these questions that are highly important. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, Bitcoin and gold are definitely, they're not brother and sister, they're perhaps cousins, but I think, you know, there's a place for both in your portfolio, and that's actually how we manage this new fund.
Yeah, and I think that's a good view back to what you said earlier from the Inception movie. An idea is like a virus. It's highly contagious, and I think that's exactly what Bitcoin is. I mean, it was for me, right? Like, I read about Bitcoin and then start questioning everything, and start buying gold, and start reading all of these other things, asking about currency, why it exists the way that it does. It's certainly love that analogy, especially when it pertains to Bitcoin. I'm curious, what would change your mind? What are you monitoring? What big change would change your mind, being so bullish on precious metals, these inflation plays, things like Bitcoin?
Well, you know, gold likes negative real yields. So if we should see highly positive real yields again, then and you know, if you get like 4 or 5 or 6% on your savings account, then I would become very cautious, because as our research tells us, it is really real yields being the most important driver for the price of gold. So in the 1970s, we saw, of course, an inflationary or even stagflationary environment with real yields being negative most of the time. Then Paul Volcker came in, and 1980s and 90s, we saw primarily positive real rates. And now since the year 2002, basically, we're seeing primarily negative real rates again. Now, do I think it's really possible that we will see rising real yields over the next couple of years? No, I think we simply cannot afford it. And, you know, we saw a small rate hike cycle in the US, and it was the smallest that we ever saw in the history of the Federal Reserve. But on the other hand, you know, the Fed did much better than the ECB, who didn't make any move so far. So from my point of view, it is very, very unlikely that real rates will really become a danger for gold going forward. I think, of course, if we have a look at the current correction, I think it is frustrating when it comes to gold. I tweeted out quite a lot today, you know, some technical charts showing that, you know, sentiment got very, very negative, that we're basically seeing panic levels already. And therefore, I think from a contrarian point of view, it might be a good addition. Do I think that gold will, you know, that is this institutional trend that has just started, that this will be reversed? I don't think so. I don't think so. Just to give you a perspective, at the moment, 0.15% of institutional money is allocated in the gold space. So that's basically nothing. And talking to institutional players over the last couple of months, I know that most of them, they want to get some gold exposure. Now, of course, as the price of gold was falling, they're all peeing in their pants. They need some price confirmation. They need rising prices, which makes it easier for them to justify their decisions, because, you know, institutional players are often very bureaucratic institutions. So I think, you know, this correction in gold, you know, it can go on for a couple of more weeks. But what should you do in a bull market? And I'm certain that we're still in a bull market. You should buy the dips. And as I've said, you know, the fundamental case is strong. The technical case is pretty strong from a contrarian point of view. So, you know, now you have to do your homework, buy the good names that were killed over the last couple of weeks. And yeah, just go against the trend.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my key investment thesis for gold. Well, one, I think inflation is coming, and it's underowned as an asset class across all portfolios. And I think eventually, yeah, you need some price confirmation, but then people will start picking it up. But it's kind of nasty right now. It's pulled back quite a bit. But
yes,
like you said, I mean, I think a long-term bull market. So this means picking up things like gold now, as well as gold miners, maybe silver, things like that. Good to confirm that. Well, Ronnie, I really appreciate we're bumping up against the time, but it's been wonderful having you on and talking about all of these things. Before we go, I mean, where can people find out more about you, more about your work? Where do you want to send my listeners?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Ben. It's been a great discussion, and I hope that you and your listeners enjoyed it. Well, you can have a look at our webpage. It's incrementum.li, which stands for Liechtenstein. You can download all our research, especially the In Gold We Trust report, but also our chart books on gold on our webpage, ingoldwetrust.report. And yeah, I'm pretty active on Twitter. My handle is @RonStoefele. Perhaps you can put a link to the description of the video. And yeah, that's basically it. And you know, we've written two books. One is called The Zero Interest Rate Trap and the other is called Austrian School for Investors. So if you need a good gift for Christmas, yeah, that's basically it. And yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Ronnie, really appreciate it. I'll link all of those things in the show notes. Stay safe and healthy and really appreciate it again.
Yeah, get well soon, Ben. And again, thanks for having me. All the best.
There you have it. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate your support. Show notes, transcript, links, and more can be found on our website at altassetallocation.com. If you'd be so kind, please share this with anyone you think might be interested or get some value from this conversation. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out. I'm always happy to hear them. Lastly, if you're on YouTube, please like the video or subscribe to the channel. If you're listening to the audio version of this, please subscribe to the podcast and or leave a review. This really helps more people find the podcast, and I really appreciate it. Thanks again, and hope you have a fantastic day. Happy investing.